From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. A panel of appeals court judges heard oral arguments last week in the latest phase of a legal challenge to Florida's tax credit scholarship program that helps children from low-income families attend private schools. The state teachers union is the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit, contending the program violates the state constitution. Supporters say it provides educational opportunities to students who otherwise wouldn't have access to them. Plus, executions are on hold in Florida amid challenges to the way the state imposes the death penalty. The Florida legislature passed a revision to the state's death penalty law after the U.S. Supreme Court declared the state's death sentencing system unconstitutional in January. Opponents recently argued that all of Florida's nearly 400 death row inmates should have their sentences changed to life in prison. A look at the future of the death penalty in Florida. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Florida's death penalty law and the fate of the state's nearly 400 death row inmates remains in flux. The U.S. Supreme Court declared Florida's death sentencing system unconstitutional in January, arguing it gave too little power to juries. The state legislature then passed a revision to that law that was ruled unconstitutional by a Miami-Dade County Circuit Court judge last week. And the state Supreme Court recently heard oral arguments in the case of death row inmate Timothy Lee Hurst. Opponents say that all of Florida's nearly 400 death row inmates should have their sentences changed to life in prison because they were sentenced under a flawed system. A look at the future of the death penalty in Florida coming up later this hour. But first, appeals court judges heard oral arguments last week in the latest phase of a legal battle challenging Florida's tax credit scholarship program that helps children from low-income families attend private schools. The program offers a 100% tax credit to businesses who make donations to nonprofits that provide private school scholarships to poor students. The program currently serves nearly 70,000 students, the majority of which attend religious schools. The Florida Education Association, which is the state's teachers union, filed a lawsuit with the support of the Florida NAACP and other groups. They argue the program diverts tax revenue away from public education to private schools and that it violates the Florida Constitution's mandate to provide a uniform and high-quality system of free public education. The First District Court of Appeals in Tallahassee is considering an appeal after a Leon County Circuit Court judge ruled last year that the FEA didn't have legal standing to bring the complaint. Groups like Black Alliance for Educational Options and the Florida African American Ministers Alliance for Parental Choice have been urging the FEA to drop the lawsuit. They say the tax credit scholarship program provides high-quality educational opportunities to predominantly minority students who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford them. Joining me now for a closer look at the case is Joanne McCall. She's president of the Florida Education Association. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
We're also speaking with John Kirtley. He's chairman of the nonprofit scholarship funding organization Step Up for Students. He's also the vice chairman of the Alliance for School Choice and the American Federation for Children. And he's the co-founder of the Tampa-based private equity firm KLH Capital. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
I also invite listeners to join the conversation. Connect with our guests by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And John, let's begin with you. First of all, tell us briefly how this tax credit scholarship program works.
Well, it's pretty simple. Companies can donate to a state-approved nonprofit, and there's all sorts of fiscal accountability for that nonprofit to make sure that the money's spent properly. And then the companies get a tax credit for doing so. And then low-income parents apply, and the only criteria is that they be low-income. And if they're awarded a scholarship, then the parent chooses a school, and the scholarship can be used for either to pay tuition at a private school of their choice or to pay transportation costs at an out-of-district public school, although most of them are used for the private school tuition option. And importantly, the scholarships are given to children and not to schools. So if the school doesn't work out for the child, the scholarship is portable and they can take it to a different school.
And this concept is something you've been championing for quite some time. You tell us about the Children's Scholarship Fund you created in the Tampa area back in the late 90s. and kind of how that sort of turned into lobbying for the statewide program.
Sure. Yeah, I'm actually a product of the public schools in Iowa and Fort Lauderdale. My mom's a former public school teacher, and you know, I really had no exposure to anything other than the public schools, and I had a fantastic experience in the public schools myself. And I sort of stumbled into this issue when I created this pretty small nonprofit in Tampa Bay back in, I guess it was 97 or 98. And I offered 700 partial scholarships to low-income families to help pay tuition. And the maximum scholarship was about $1,500 per year. And I really didn't have any idea if there would be any demand for it. And we really didn't do hardly any advertising at all. I think I got on one morning show, TV show, and a couple radio shows. It was just myself walking around to housing projects and churches on my own and talking about the program. And in 4 months, we got 12,000 applications for 700 scholarship slots. And so that was kind of surprising to me. So that indicated to me that there was, you know, demand on the part of low-income families for options. And then in 2001, I worked with the legislature, and the legislature decided to create the tax credit scholarship program to offer that kind of empowerment to more low-income families.
What are some of the reasons that students who take advantage of this kind of program say that they want to attend a private school versus public school?
Well, the parents, they don't have any judgment about any systems. They, in fact, most of the parents that I talk to who use the program, I mean, they often have one child that's doing great in the public schools, and then another that's just struggling. And it's not the fault of the student, and it's certainly not the fault of the teachers. I mean, anybody who teaches in a low-income environment, whether it be private or public, is just a hero, because it's a tremendously difficult thing to do. And, you know, when I was coming up, the definition of public education was pretty simple. We raised taxpayer dollars, and then we gave all the dollars to the districts, and the districts ran all the schools in a fairly uniform manner, and then we assigned kids by zip code. And that sort of one-size-fits-all system worked incredibly well for almost every kid for probably the last 100 years, and it still works incredibly well for most kids. But for some kids, they're just not going to thrive at their assigned public school. And fortunately, Florida is a leader in the movement towards what I would call a new definition of public education, which is raising taxpayer dollars to educate kids, but empowering parents to choose different delivery methods and even different providers that best suit their children's needs. And some districts are doing a fantastic job themselves of creating options. I mean, Dade County, for example, is the nation's leader in creating magnet schools, which are schools of choice created by the districts and run by the districts that have a different curriculum or a different environment that will engage a child and keep them on the right path. And I'm very proud to both donate to and fundraise for two magnets in my hometown of Tampa. We have two single-gender middle schools in Tampa. And they're just wonderful, and they're A schools, but they're not for everybody. But for the kids who go there, it's the perfect fit. We also have charter schools now, which are basically schools of choice run under contract with the district. And I'm proud to donate to and support a charter in Southeast Hillsboro, and it's run by a nonprofit called the Redlands Christian Migrant Association that's dealt with the migrant community for over 50 years, mm-hmm. And they created a charter school, and it's a great school for that community because they know the migrant workers' kids so well. They take kids that are 2-3 years behind, some of them don't even speak English, and turn them around. We now have virtual schooling over the internet paid for by the taxpayers. I think that's fantastic. We have dual enrollment where kids go to their local high school and also to take classes at community college or college funded by the taxpayers. And we now even have students who combine all these things at the same time. I mean, you'll have a kid taking two classes at his zoned high school, two classes over the internet, and two classes at the community college all at the same time. And I personally believe that degree of customization is the future, and I think it's a good thing. And the thing is, there are just some kids, some low-income kids, who will only thrive They're only going to make it if they can attend. They can attend a school that's outside of the district, even a faith-based school. And I just strongly believe that that option has to be on the table to keep these kids from being statistics. And that's not any comment on the quality of the public schools, not at all. It's just a comment on how individual each child is and how every single one of them has to find the environment in which they're going to thrive.
All right. And, you know, I've noticed the tax credit cap for the current fiscal year is about $447 million. And that's set to increase in the coming fiscal year to nearly $560 million. Does that kind of serve as a testament to the success of the program, getting that cap increased? And are there currently students who want to take advantage of a program like this but can't because of the credit cap?
There are. But, you know, I'm really agnostic as to where kids go. Like I said, I personally support public schools. I support this program. I also support an individual charter school. I am agnostic as to where kids go. I just want low-income kids to do well, and I want kids to keep from becoming statistics. And, you know, if they were all to thrive in their zone public schools, I'd be thrilled. That'd be wonderful because I could go and focus on something else. But that's just not going to happen. And again, it's no one's fault. I just worry about people who can't make a choice because they don't have enough money. I mean, obviously, parents who have the means exercise school choice either by moving to a neighborhood that has a school that they like or by paying for an alternative. So I don't worry about them. I only worry about those who don't have the means to make that decision.
And you know the issue over this lawsuit and the tax credit scholarship program has been framed by some as really a civil rights or a social justice issue, and I think that's based on, you know, the percentage of students taking advantage of these scholarships who are minorities. Is that how you see it as well?
Well, you know, I think it's a little uncomfortable for me as, you know, a white male in his 50s to be, you know, declaring something a civil rights issue. So all I will do is quote others, and we do have over 100 African-American ministers from around the state and over 100 Latino ministers from around the state who've come together in a formal coalition asking the plaintiffs to drop the suit. We also had in January, the day after the Martin Luther King holiday, over 10,000 people came to the Capitol to show their opposition to the lawsuit, and they actually listened to MLK's son, Martin Luther King III, who urged the plaintiffs to drop the suit. So I guess, you know, observing those things, you might be able to make that observation, sure.
And, you know, the program's been in place now for more than a decade, I think 13 years. Is there data you can point to demonstrating that the program works and, you know, that kids who were perhaps struggling in a public school are improving academically when they switch to a private school with one of these scholarships?
Yes. Yes. By law, the children must take either the state assessment or a nationally recognized norm reference test approved by the state DOE, and most of them take the latter. And every year, the scores must be reported to a state university. Used to be University of Florida, now it's now Florida State. And every year the university issues a report, which you can see on our website, stepupforstudents.com. And the report, it discusses the learning gains of the children overall, by age, grade, race, geography, and also down to the private school level. And what the research has found is that, first of all, the children are, well, they're very poor economically. By law, you have to qualify for the free reduced lunch program to be on the program. And that's about $40,000 for a household of four. But our families are actually much poorer than that in actuality. Mm-hmm. Our average household income is about $25,000 for a household of four. Roughly 75% are minority and 60% are single family homes. What's interesting about their academic performance is the research shows that they were the worst performers in the public schools academically when they left. Mm-hmm. And so we're taking the hardest case kids from the public school. And it makes sense, too, because if your kid is doing great in their assigned public school, you're not going to change their school. especially when you have to come out of pocket. Most of our parents have to come out of pocket at least about $500 to participate in the program. If your income's $25,000, you're not going to do that. But if your kid is struggling and you're worrying about them becoming a statistic, well, you will take them out and try something different. So the kids are the worst performers in the public schools when they leave. And then once they're on the program, the research shows that they make learning gains equal to children of all incomes, including children of higher incomes, which is very encouraging. But the most encouraging thing to me, I guess, is that the research has found, and again, you can go look at this on our website, the research has found that the more a public school has children come on our program, in other words, the more a school has children leave for our program, the bigger the learning gains for the kids that remain at that public school. So this program is actually helping the academic performance of the public schools, which is something that really heartens me. I mean, that's something I would love to see.
All right. The Florida Education Association is the lead plaintiff in a legal challenge to Florida's tax credit scholarship program, which incentivizes businesses to fund scholarships for low-income students to attend private school. We're talking with FEA President Joanne McCall and John Kirtley with the nonprofit scholarship funding organization Step Up for Students. Connect with our guests and add your comments and questions to the conversation. Phone lines are open at 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or send us a message on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. And Joanne McCall, first of all, tell us about who's supporting this suit beyond the Florida Education Association. It's quite a number of groups.
Yes, we have a wide range of people. We have the NAACP, we have ourselves, we have a group of ministers and concerned parents and the PTA as well. So we have a broad base in support of this lawsuit as we move forward.
And can you articulate the legal case that this lawsuit is making here? How does the tax credit scholarship program, in your view, violate the state constitution?
Well, let's be clear what we're in court about right now.
Yes. Well, right.
We're in court right now in the district appeals about standing. A lower court said we didn't have standing. We believe we do have standing, and we are in court right now waiting to see what we have, whether or not we have standing. And so that is the first hurdle that we have to get past. The merits of the case haven't been argued. We believe if the merits of the case are ever argued in court, we'll win, much like we did in 2006 in the first original case. It took 6 years to go through the court system all the way to the Supreme Court. So we believe it violates the Constitution. When they talk about that you can donate instead of paying your taxes, let's just think about it like this. If I go to Macy's, at the point of sale, they are to collect my sales tax and then send it to the state. That's what they're supposed to do. What they're saying in this case is that instead of sending it to the state, you can send it to a charity. Does that mean when I go to Macy's, I can then direct where I want my money to go rather than to the state coffers? I mean, that's the reality. That's what you're talking about. This is money from the point of sale that should go into the general fund that then is available to help all public schools. And let's be clear about it. There are 2.7 million students across this state. The state has identified 300 schools that they call low underperforming schools, which I think they should be calling priority schools. And if you look at where they are, they're in predominantly poverty-stricken communities. So if we're serious about educating, making sure that everybody has a shot and a good quality education not defined by their zip code, then we should shore up those schools. Instead of taking scarce resources and creating a voucher shell game, we should be shoring up public schools. And I would disagree with what the speaker said about choice. Florida is the number one state in the country for school choice, where kids can go to different schools within their district, and now they've just passed it where they can cross county lines. So there's all kinds of opportunities for parents to go within the public system. But the Florida Constitution is pretty clear. It says it's the paramount duty of the Florida legislature to fund a free, uniform, high-quality public school system. And when you take money away from the public school system and create a parallel system, you're harming those students that you're leaving behind.
Okay, so that's the constitutional statute there. I mean, and this this money that's incentivizing businesses to donate to the scholarship funds. I mean, it's basically at this point I guess we could equate it with perhaps uncollected tax revenue. If this program were to go away, would that money, once it's collected, then go to public schools, or would the legislature determine
that? It would go to the general revenue.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Which then would be determined based on the money. And we all know how the budget works in the state of Florida. They decide their priorities and they move it out. The bottom line is they have been harming public schools for a long time, for more than 15 years.
And I think, as you noted earlier, a Leon County Circuit Court judge dismissed the case last May, stating plaintiffs lacked standing to pursue the court case. I was a bit confused about that ruling. If the FEA doesn't have legal standing to file the suit, then who would? I mean, because that's what we're looking at now.
Well, that's what we'd like to know also. That's why we appealed it. We believe that is not an accurate statement. There should always be checks and balances within our government. And if we believe that the Constitution has been violated, citizens should have the right to say that. And so that's why we're in appeal court. We believe that the lower court made an error in that case, and we believe that we do have standing, and so that's why we appealed. So that's where we are.
Are you fairly confident the appeals court will rule in your favor? And if they do, what's the next step?
Well, you know, if I was a betting person, you know, but I'm not, and I don't have a crystal ball either, and I never know. You never know what judges will or will not do.
Right.
And you can't, and when I sat in the courtroom last Tuesday, you can't judge on the questions that they ask because you never know.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know where they'll end up. I just know that whatever the ruling is, we'll have a strategy to move forward.
And the Orlando Sentinel has reported that about 70% of participating private schools with this program are religious in nature. Is there a separation of church and state issue here as well?
I believe there's an absolute separation of church and state. Public dollars are not to go directly to religious schools, and that's where a large portion of them go. That being said, we believe there's a lot of constitutional issues there about the collection of the revenue, the separation of church and state, but it's really a fundamental right that for all students to have the opportunity for a free, uniform, high-quality public school system. That's what the Constitution says. I didn't write it. I'm just reading it. And the Florida legislature, every single session, has sidestepped their duty to the students of this state in a shameful manner.
Are you also concerned about perhaps how private schools are regulated a bit differently from public schools here in Florida?
Well, I know Mr. Kirtley talked a lot about research and statistics, and I just want to say, in regards to that, you can't compare apples and oranges, and that's what he's comparing. They do not teach the same curriculum. They don't have to teach the same standards. They don't have to follow the same rules and regulations. They have to give an assessment, and he just said himself that they choose the nationally normed reference test, not the FSA. The FSA is to judge students' growth, a year's worth of growth, because that's what they're supposed to make. And a nationally normed reference test does not demonstrate their year's worth of growth. It shows how they rank against their peers. It doesn't tell you where they start to where they end, which is what the FSA does. So when you want to talk about statistics, you can't compare the FSA with a nationally referenced norm test because they're not the same. And that's not something that you statistically could use.
Okay. And what would you say to the parents of a student who, you know, they feel like their kid is doing better now in a private school than they were in a public school, and the only way that they're able to do it financially is through, this tax credit scholarship program? I mean, are there other options out there to give low-income families, more say in getting their kids a quality education?
I think the best say they have is at the ballot box to make sure that people are elected to the Florida House and the Florida Senate that really truly care about public schools and all children of all walks of life, and it shouldn't be designed by your zip code. If the Florida legislature was doing right by the students of this state, there would absolutely be no need for any voucher because every public school in this state would be shored up and have exactly what they need. That's the bottom line here. The Florida legislature is not doing their job, and they're not meeting the needs of the students. As for what I said earlier, Florida is the number one state for school choice. Parents have the option and the opportunity within their district to petition to go to any school that they like if they think there's a better choice in their district for them. And they just passed a law now that they now can cross county lines. So there would absolutely be no reason that they couldn't find a school that met the needs for their students.
All right.
And, within the public sector.
Right.
Keeping the difference of separation of church and state.
And John, did you want to respond to anything Joanne has said?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you. First of all, in terms of the matter of whether the public schools are injured or not, I would be actually very concerned for the public school districts and the taxpayers if the program were shut down. The state accounting agency, the nonpartisan official agency called APAGA, actually issued a report showing that for every dollar of tax credit given, the taxpayers save $1.49. And the reason for that is that the scholarship is set at roughly 80% of what the districts receive when a student shows up for it to be educated. So if the program were to be eliminated just in the annual operating costs, the taxpayers would be out tens of millions of dollars. And frankly, there's no guarantee that the overall budget for K-12 public education would go up. Now, the legislature has to allocate its resources to a lot of different things. And, it could in fact be the case that if all the 80,000 kids came back, the amount would not go up overall and per pupil spending would go down. And I would point out that since the program has been in place, per pupil spending and overall spending has gone up. In fact, in 2013-14, the per pupil spending went up by 6.3%. But the other thing I really worry about is if the program shuts down, there's going to be 80,000 kids that return to the districts all at once. And they're not spread out. They're concentrated in areas of poverty. Mm-hmm. For example, in Dade County, we have 20,000 children, and they're not spread out over the county. And in Orange County, we have two contiguous zip codes where there's 2,000 kids on the program. That's probably four or five elementary schools. And there was an interesting article just last week where the superintendent of the Osceola School District was lamenting the fact that they can't create the 10,000 new spaces that they need over the next 5 years. And in fact, he said that, well, we're hoping we get some help from charter schools to relieve that pressure. Well, in Osceola County, we have 3,000 scholarship kids. And if they can't create 10,000 spaces over 10 years, I don't know how they're going to create 3,000 in one day. And the state DOE estimates that it costs about $35,000 to create one new student station, and that's not even counting the land acquisition costs. So if we can even absorb half of our kids, that's highly optimistic, it's going to cost well over $1 billion to build new spaces for these kids, and it could be well over $2 billion. And that's bad for the scholarship kids, it's bad for the districts, and it's bad for the taxpayers. And the other thing I'll comment on about separation of church and state is this. The largest voucher program in the country is our state's voluntary pre-K program. Mm-hmm. Every four-year-old in our state is guaranteed taxpayer-funded pre-K, rich or poor. And over 90% of them go to private pre-K, and over 30,000 of them attend religious faith-based pre-K programs. In fact, many of them go to the same schools that our kids go to. We also have something called the McKay Scholarship Program and something else called the Gardner Scholarship Program. These are programs where kids who have been labeled special needs children by the public school districts, their parents can take money out of the treasury, I might add. In our program, the money never even reaches the treasury. In McKay and Gardner, the money comes from the treasury. It is truly a voucher, and parents pay for private school for their children. Over half the McKay kids go to faith-based schools, and many of them go to the same schools that our kids go to. We also have Bright Futures. This is money where students take money from the treasury, and they pay for tuition at faith-based colleges. I mean, you look at Southeastern University in Lakeland. Their mission statement says, we will prepare Christ-centered young men and women to enter the world and do his work. You can't get any more faith-based than that. And yet, the plaintiffs have not filed suit against any of these other programs. And our program, the money doesn't even come from the Treasury. So I'm kind of at a loss as to, if they're so upset about the separation of church and state, why haven't they filed suit against those other programs?
Joanne McCall.
I think you missed my point, Mr. Kirtley, because my fundamental piece that I talked about was the Constitution that says a fair, quality, uniform, free public school system, and that's really the basis of where we're going. I added that in as a second piece. But I will tell you, if we win this, it will go to appeals, and we know that. That will give the Florida legislature plenty of time to figure out what to do, because on an average, we bring 30,000 new students into our public schools each and every year. So over a long-term period, while it goes through the appeals, the Florida legislature certainly would have a way to figure out how to do what they should have done in the beginning. And as for the cost of money that goes to the voucher follows the student back to the school, so that would increase that school's revenue. And as for helping the public schools, when you take funding away, that school is still left supporting the teachers, salaries, the cost of the buildings, the cost of running that school. That all maintains the same, whether or not you take kids out or not. So I believe the Florida legislature has plenty of time, as this works through the courts, to figure out the appropriate way to come back to do what's right for all students across the state, all 2.7 million, all of them.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there because we are out of time for this portion of the program. But thanks so much to my guests, Joanne McCall. She's president of the Florida Education Association. And also thanks to John Kirtley. He's chairman of the nonprofit scholarship funding organization Step Up for Students. He's also with the Alliance for School Choice and the American Federation of Children. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, a closer look at the death penalty in Florida and how death sentences are imposed in the state. Florida Supreme Court justices recently heard arguments in one death row inmate's case, saying that all of Florida's nearly 400 death row inmates should have their sentences switched to life in prison on the basis that they were sentenced under a system the U.S. Supreme Court ruled unconstitutional earlier this year. A look at the future of the death penalty in Florida, just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.